The Fancy Film Fellows employs a frank discussion of cinema that includes adult language and descriptions of mature situations. We have no concern for spoilers, so be warned, you might learn more than you'd care to know. Heralds and announcements.
Welcome to Fancy Film Fellows. My name is Ilya, and I am your host for the part of the podcast that we like to call Heralds and Announcements. Our fancy way of saying movies we watched recently that we either liked or disliked strongly enough to want to mention or discuss. Now, the way this works is we go around the horn, and each one of us mentions a movie they either want to herald or denounce. Afterwards, if we feel like it, the others may offer their own opinion on the movie in question. And so it goes till we're all out of opinions. Now, we're joined today...
Never have all the opinions.
We are joined today by our core four, our classic four-man lineup. We have Basil.
Hey.
We have Ruben.
It's not a metaphorical horn, it's a literal horn.
And Patrick, you can hear Patrick doing the other horn.
Hey.
And myself. Welcome, Ilya. Everyone. Ilya, yes. Thank you for introducing myself. It would have been weird to speak of myself in the third person.
You did say your name at the top. So
I did say my name at the top. Out. Yeah.
I realized I did not do that on a recent episode that I was hosting. I said Haley's name four times in my intro.
Oh, that's
my
good. Own. I'm sure she
appreciated
that.
Ever on the podcast,
that.
I think.
It's great. Everyone should know who you are by now.
You're famous.
We got those hardcore fans.
Hardcore
Fancy Film Fellows fans. The quadruple F's, as we like to call them.
Quad F's.
The
That's what we call our fans from now on.
All right.
I don't even know if they'll be able to hear that.
Good bit, everyone.
I heard it.
We're hitting on each other over here.
if it's to podcasting in the same room.
Wow, I've already lost control of this episode. It's just started. My hosting is really unsuccessful. So who wants to start? Let's start with Basil, actually.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to herald Last Days. This movie fucking rules.
So Last Days, can you just say a little bit about Last Days, like what year, who's the director?
Oh, Gus Van Sant. Oh, the year is like 2006, I want to say.
Cool.
I think, but yes. Funny thing that I did not notice the last time I watched it.
2005?
Mm-hmm.
Close enough. Yeah, that's fine.
It's pretty
good. Funny thing that I noticed this time that I did not notice, even though it's not credited this way on IMDb or anything, on the actual slate, the title of the film is Gus Van Sant's Last Days.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty good. It's a lot of Michael Pitt walking around mumbling to himself in the woods and in his big mansion. It's very beautiful and very funny. It kind of coalesces a lot of what Gus Van Sant's been doing his whole career in terms of people who are very, very, very sad and pathetic and kind of funny in their patheticness, and makes me uncomfortable, as I have mentioned all elsewhere regarding, you know, many of his other films like Drugstore Cowboy and especially My Own Private Idaho. And it's a kind of grim movie, but a movie that I like a lot. And Michael Pitt is very, very watchable in it. He's an actor who is kind of sometimes a little too much, as we mentioned in Ghost in the Shell, a little too much. Yeah, but I think he's a good physical actor, and in this, when he's given kind of a role that's pretty low-key, he really does a great job with it. There's a real fun scene where I think it's Lucas Haas tries to talk to him about his mixtape, and wants to give it to him. And it's very funny because once someone else realizes what Lucas Haas does, they're like taking him away, like grab him and be like, hey, he doesn't want to hear about that shit. Like, he's busy or whatever. But like while he's being talked to about it, he does seem genuinely interested. And it's like this sort of sad thing where, you know, everyone's like treating him like, oh, you know, he's the rock god, he's the deity, you gotta leave him alone. But like, he's a real just sad person looking for some connection. And then, you know, the few times people try to give it to him, everyone assumes they're just being invasive and being rude. And then it's cool. It's very, very watchable. It's a movie that I would just put on whenever I feel like it, because it grabs me right away. And, you know, doesn't demand a lot, maybe. You know, like, it does in that you can pay attention to it and really get a lot from it, but it's also just like a movie that is filled with a kind of ambiance that I like, so having it around in my room or something feels pretty nice.
Is this your favorite Vincent now?
It might be. I have to rewatch Elephant. It's been a long time since I saw Elephant. It's real close between those two, but yeah, it's Elephant, not so rewatchable. I mean, I like it a lot, but yeah, not really.
The one
movie that feels grim. Good to see.
Yeah. Much more grim to watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also, I've heard that there's a lot of comparison between Last Days and John Dielman. I've seen that, like, side-by-side, like, comparisons of frames and that. So
that's fun. I never seen John Dielman. I know that.
You should.
Some people, yeah, I guess so.
It's the movie that I recommend to people the most that I disliked the most when I watched
it. Patrick, what about you?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and denounce a movie that Ruben and I saw in the theater. It's a new film, but I also have some kind of backhand heralds for the movie, I guess. That's probably a bad choice of words, but as it were, a backhanded compliment.
Backhanded compliment.
So the movie was executive produced and stars a 13-year-old actress named Marseille Martin, who I believe is in the television show Blackish. I've actually never watched Blackish, but apparently she's one of the stars of that show. And I think it's just extremely impressive that a 13-year-old was able to executive produce a movie, because that's like, that's some real initiative there. Mm-hmm. And her performance in the movie isn't bad. She's actually a pretty good performer.
Sorry, Patrick, did you mention what the movie is called?
Oh, sorry. The movie is called Little. Okay. It's in theaters right now. if you are curious to check it out, you know, it's not a good movie.
It probably won't be in theaters by the time this podcast is released.
Probably.
Because it's not going to be released until
May. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, it'll be in the second run. You know, you can check it out at the Dollar Theater or whatever.
Get it at your local Redbox to see how right Patrick was.
Yeah, I went into it with, I think, kind of high expectations because it has Issa Rae in it and has Regina Hall, my best actress winner from last year. So I was like, ooh, good cast. I'm excited. But it's kind of a goofy body swap comedy with some really weird, obtuse, like, uncomfortable elements to it. They're specifically, like, there's a transphobic joke at the beginning that I was not on board for, and you know, not on board for any transphobic mm-hmm. jokes, really.
The character is a bad character when she makes the joke, yeah. but it's still like, why yeah. even include this?
Yeah, she's supposed to be a bad person then, but...
Also, like, we were in the theater with one other person, and I got a huge laugh out of him, which made me super uncomfortable.
Yeah. I wasn't cool with that guy. he seemed sketch. But the other joke but that's really that uncomfortable, there's a teacher character in the movie... When the whole plot of the movie is Regina Hall is like this mean boss character and she gets somehow magically turned into a child again. She has to go back and relive, you know, being 13 over again. Mm-hmm. So she'll stop being mean to people, but she has to go to school and her teacher is this like really kind of like hot dude.
But then she looks like Tom Hardy. I'm going to call him Tom Softy.
Yeah. Tom Softy. Yeah. But there's a scene, there's like an extended scene where she like flirts with him. And I was like, why is this in the movie? This is uncomfortable. Like, it's a weird joke. Like, I get that she's a grown woman in a teenager's body, but come on. It's gross. It's yeah. gross to make a 13-year-old flirt with a man. Like, get it out of here.
I remember Kirsten Dunst, 15 years ago being like, I'm sick of people asking me what it was like to kiss Brad Pitt when I was 12 or whatever.
Oh, God.
From Interview with the Vampire. Or maybe it was Tom Cruise. I forget. Whichever one she kisses in that movie.
Vampires. Who even remembers?
Yeah, I haven't watched 13 Going on 30 in a while, but I'm pretty sure if I rewatched that, it would also make me extremely uncomfortable. Just because.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the reverse still... situation. A 13-year-old yeah. in an adult's body.
Which is also fucking weird, though, right?
Yeah. It's, like, yeah. those movies are yeah. weird.
Like, a 13-year-old in a older woman's body is really fucking weird. And it's mm-hmm. not. Like, there's a lot of stuff that is skirt around that. But, yeah.
Anyway. At least that, though, you know, Jennifer Garner is an actual adult, whereas this person yeah. is an actual child, which is
yeah, yeah.
which adds that's a layer also, to it that is yeah,
sure. sure.
Yeah. He rejects her advances, but again, like the transphobic joke, it's like, okay, I guess you are right, but why? Like, just made people really uncomfortable yeah. for no reason, for not that's a good like joke.
Yeah, it's like the smoking phenomenon that you talked about. Where it's like, even if you put smoking on screen and say that it's bad, people are still going to want to smoke just because they see smoking.
Yeah.
Like, you guys watch this together, right?
I assume. Yes, we watch the theater together.
Okay. So all together, you're both more denounced about this. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't on my list, but yeah, I gave it 1.5 stars. So. But I'm higher than Patrick on Marseille Martin's performance. I would say it's better than all right. I would say it's one of the best performances I've seen this year.
Cool. What about you, Ruben? What do you want to herald or announce?
I'm also going to talk about a movie that Basil loves, but because I'm a bad person, I'm going to give it a mild announcement, and that's 1927's It. Starring Clara Bow.
Yeah. She's got it.
She does. She does have it. She's definitely, like Marseille Martin, the herald-worthy aspect of the film. Her performance is, like, surprisingly modern. And that, like, it feels less reactive, I guess. Like, it feels less theatrical. It feels more internal and emotional. Like, she's sort of signaling full change in acting, but that also is kind of awkward at times because she stands out in a sea of other performers who aren't as good. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why Clara Bow became famous for this film, and the director never made anything noteworthy yeah. again, because this movie is extremely boring to look at, and like 90% of the plot is conveyed in the titling, as opposed yeah. to the visuals, which is like, basically, if you were going to make fun of a silent film, you would say that those were the two worst problems to have. It's like, oh, silent mm-hmm. films are so boring. And it's like, no, they're not. Watch a visual one, like, any Charlie Something. Chaplin film, yeah. a bunch of the early German films, like,
oh, yeah.
they have like two titles in them. It's like a vampire, and it's like, oh, yeah. that's it.
Yeah,
of Empire. But this is like all words, so I felt like I was reading, and then everything is shot in like the same like three quarters shot of like their knee to like a little bit of headroom, so you can see the whole actor like the whole time. And I was like, I'm so tired of looking at this movie. Yeah. So
I did not know how to frame people back then.
Or they only just did one frame.
Yeah, they only knew how to do one frame.
There's a part in the movie where they go to a fair, and it's like all these wild rides that apparently the fairs used to have. In the plot of the movie, Cuervo's character is introducing someone of a higher class than her to the pleasures of being a lower class person by taking him to the fair. And there's like this spinning wheel that like flings people off of it. And another thing is like, and I was like, man, if I was watching this movie in 1927, I would get up right at this point and go walk straight to the fair, because it looks so much more fun than this movie is.
I want to be on that wheel that throws me off into the ground.
Yeah. Big slides. It's all crazy fair stuff.
I think that's fair. Yeah, 95% of my enjoyment of the movie is Clara Bow related.
Mm-hmm.
The other 5% is when they get the author of the original article to come and tell her all the reasons why she's got it.
It's very funny. An early cameo.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-Hitchcock. Cool. That's it.
Yeah, good stuff.
All right, back to you, Basil. What's next on your list?
Oh, yeah, you're skipping yourself.
For now.
Yeah. Denouncing Sophie's Choice. Classic.
It's fair.
I think you did that last time, though.
No. Ooh. Unless I watched it and then went back in time. And then...
Weird. I have weird memory of you denouncing it. Maybe I dreamt about this.
Maybe he just talked a lot about it in chat, like he did with me.
Yeah, I may have talked it up.
Possibly.
I also may have mentioned it on a different podcast. I can't remember.
Ooh.
But yeah, I saw it earlier this month, and we definitely recorded our last Herald of Sin announcements last month. So
then I apologize and please denounce away.
Oh yeah, no problem. Won't take much encouragement for me to talk about how Sophie's Choice is bad. Yeah, Peter McNichol's in it. He's he's weird because I almost always think of him from Ally McBeal, because I watched a lot of Ally McBeal when I was a teenager. So I'm like, hey, it's the guy from Ally McBeal doing a bad Southern accent. And he's just a horny writer trying to do it with Meryl Streep while she's real sad about having survived the Holocaust. It's a thing that they don't talk about with the movie. It's very strange. He's the main character. He narrates the movie, and he's real sad because he's 22 and he's a virgin, and he can't get over being a virgin. He really just wants to fucking do it, man. And you know, then Meryl Streep's real sad about her dead kids. It's very strange. I mean, there's a lot left out. I guess the titular choice is the main thing people talk about with the movie, but they don't talk about the fact that it doesn't work. Like she's like, you have to pick which one of your kids, and then she sends one kid. But then later, her other kid also dies in the Holocaust. So, you know, it's not like she the choice.
The choice.
The actual
matter.
Choice she should have made was not to separate her family and to at least, you know, be together, because now she's alive, but you know, sans children. I'm very sad about it.
Mm.
It's very boring. It's 2.5 hours long, and the way it's all set up, it was strangely unemotional to me, because it's kind of almost like a mystery. Like, he doesn't know that much about her, and she won't talk about her past, so then she brings up you know, like, it's partway through the movie that she finally reveals, oh, she used to be married and her husband died in the Holocaust. And then later, oh, and I used to have children and they died in the Holocaust. And it's almost the very end of the movie when she makes the choice but it's gone, since it's gone through kind of regressing flashbacks to the point where it gets to that, like, there's no point where she's with her kids, like, in, you know, living with them and stuff like that. The audience has to project onto it, like, oh, this must be really sad to have kids, but there's no shown human connection with them. They don't exist until they're ready to die. Yeah. For dramatic purposes.
That was on the AFI Top 100, right? We missed discussing that one when we were doing our AFI list with Loose Cannons last year.
We discussed a different film by the same director, though.
Yeah, Pacula. Ooh. Very good. Yeah, I was surprised he made a movie so boring. And but he did it. Way to go.
You sure did. All right, okay. Patrick, what's your next pick?
Well, I'm going to talk about a short film called Kit Bull. It's one of the Pixar shorts that they, I guess, have released on YouTube now. They have, like, a YouTube channel that has a lot of stuff on it, but... Sorry, can you not hear me? It's odd that you can't hear me because you're next to me. But I
Patrick was talking to Ruben just now, just in case.
Sorry. Ruben was. It's weird because we're both wearing headphones and we're in the same room, but it's kind of weird because we can probably hear each other the least because of the headphones.
Yeah,
cool setup.
Yeah, but I want to talk about Kit Bull because I think it's actually a case where I actually really enjoy the animation that they bring forth in it. And I think it's very well observed animation. The whole story revolves around this kitten sort of befriending this pit bull who's like chained up in this backyard. And, you know, it's a typical kind of like heartwarming Disney stuff, but I think it works because of how simple it is and how much it focuses on the way that the animals actually act. It's more about like sort of just this observational idea of like the way that their bodies move and the way that their like temperaments bounce off of one another. And I think that's an interesting take for a Pixar movie. It's not just another one of those like, oh, be an artist, follow your heart kind of things. It's actually about sort of like observing a real life thing and kind of, you know, trying to play it out in full. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the sort of like non-talking narrative of it.
This came out recently?
Yeah, it came out, I think it came out this year. I think it came out like earlier this year. They released it on their YouTube channel.
Mm.
So.
And that was a Herald.
Yes, yeah. That's a Herald, yes.
Yeah, good.
Announced.
Good.
In your face, sure. Pixar. Better than usual, but still not good enough.
Ruben, what about you?
I'm going to herald the 1946 film Shoeshine, directed by Vittorio De Sica, which is, oddly enough, feels like a dry run for the 400 Blows, a movie directed by a different person.
In a different country.
Basically, I think if you like the 400 Blows, you should probably like Shoeshine. The music's not as good. But then again,
what is
Orange Blows might be my favorite music of all time, so that would be a very high bar to cross. But it has the same sort of like tragic unsettlingness of like child adults surviving in a world that's abandoned them, including the same really upsetting shot from behind like a paddy wagon with a kid looking out the bars of the window and crying. I was like, not an original shot by Francois Truffaut. Inspired shot.
Makes sense.
It also reinforced something that I've been feeling for a while, which is that like so much of how I feel about movies, and I bet it's true of other people too, has to do with when they watch them. So, like, movies that felt very original to people, like, in the 70s, if we go back and watch them now, feel less original to us because we watched a lot of movies that came after them. And I kind of feel like because Shushine was less famous than the 400 Blows or whatever, I would have liked Shushine more, even more than I already did, which was a lot if I hadn't already seen the 400 Blows. Even though it came out like 13 years earlier. Sorry, Shushine. Shushine.
Yeah.
Shushine.
Good effort.
Basika. You did an okay job, but not good enough retrospectively.
Yeah. Well, I'll just console himself with his fame of the Bicycle Thieves.
Yeah.
Marto D.
Yeah. I guess I'm a Desika stan now, since I've seen three of his movies and I've given them all 4 stars.
What was the third one?
Umberto D.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Basil,
time
you
to watch all his weird body comedies that he made in the 60s. That'll really temper your appreciation.
I just love a 60s divorce body Italian comedy. Style.
Is that his?
No,
divorce
that's
Italian
not him.
Style?
No.
That's
oh, that he that's right. played in it, right?
He did a bunch of other ones like that, though, with Sophia Loren in the 60s. They might be good. I could be talking on my ass. Maybe they're great. Maybe they're the perfect kind of body comedy.
It's true. Basil, you got another one?
Oh, yeah, I do. I am going to, for no real reason, denounce The Suckling. It's a movie nobody's seen. It's not very good. It was made for no money. It's a horror film. It takes place in Brooklyn, supposedly, but was clearly shot in, like, the woods somewhere in, like, a nearly abandoned house. It's supposed to be a brothel slash abortion clinic. Illegal abortion clinic. Yeah, exactly.
So is that, like, a noun or a gerund? Like, is it like, the suckling, as in the suckling someone?
It's a noun, yeah, yeah. It's a baby.
Or is it a weird verb thing that becomes a noun?
No,
okay. All right.
No. It's just
Yeah,
the premise of the movie is a woman is talked into an abortion by her, like, rich college boyfriend. Not really talked into, like, they go to the clinic, and then the abortionist just drugs her and gives her the abortion without her consent. It's less like, hey, we're just talking about all this stuff. You can make up your mind. And then gives her some tea. She falls asleep.
Oof.
She wakes up. She's had the abortion. They flush the fetus down the toilet. It lands in some toxic waste and mutates into the titular suckling that gets revenge and kills all the people in the brothel. Yeah, it's an insane movie. It was, made for, as I said, like, almost no money by a director who never did anything before.
Was the director Fred Phelps?
Yeah, it has a really weird conservative vibe to it, which is very strange for, I mean, it's also a sleazy exploitation movie. There's a lot of cleavage, a lot of, there's a weird scene where a guy at the brothel gets pegged, and it's played for laughs and stuff, but it's like a strange, it doesn't have any place in the movie. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just like the guy thought of the scene and was like, we're gonna do it, and then did it. And I watched it with my coworkers having some drinks after work in the theater. And so we laughed a good deal, but it's still a pretty gross movie. Pretty, I guess bonkers in the sense that he didn't have almost any money, but he had enough, apparently, to do whatever he wanted at all times. There was no quality control, no one second-guessing any of his decision-making. So I guess it's an auteurist piece in that regard, but I didn't like picking up anything that he was putting down, so no thanks on that movie. Fair. There's plenty of other weirdo movies like that that don't have a strange anti-abortion agenda attached to them that you can enjoy instead.
Yeah, Kill Baby Kill, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever. Yeah.
Would you like it if Eli Roth remade it?
Possibly. God damn it.
Yeah. Sounds like an Eli Roth film.
There we go.
Yeah.
Except for the direction in which the commentary is going. You should, if you've never seen it, you should watch It's Alive, which is the opposite film. Mm. It's like, oh, they should have killed that baby.
I don't want to be born is the same. Yeah.
That's Larry Cohen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. R.I.P. That's Larry Cohen.
Cool guy.
Not I Don't Want to Be Born, It's Alive is Larry Cohen. I don't know who the director of I Don't Want to Be Born is, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was another goofy movie that I watched in high school that I actually remade with my friends Peyton and Kaylee. We remade it in a short film version. And the baby that we had in that one was a doll of Stan from South Park, so we just had it wrapped up in a blanket.
Nice.
It was just killing people. It was very, very, very fun times. Fun times high school.
Fun times sounds high great. School. Patrick, you got another pick?
I'm gonna herald this is on me. I thought we were doing the podcast later today. I thought I was gonna have time to finish, but I started watching Deep Cover. I'm liking what I've seen so far. I'm like 3/4 of the way into the movie. So I'll herald the first 3/4 of the movie. If the if the last quarter of the film derails the whole thing, I guess I'll come back and let you know. But it's a good movie so far. Bill Duke's kind of weirdo direction really works in this one, since it's kind of a straightforward, like, undercover cop / drug dealing story. It acknowledges all of the things that I would want a movie like that to acknowledge, which is that the police are really the biggest shitheads in all of it, and the government is actually the ones who are, like, running the drug trade and all of that. So I'm like, yeah, that's good. They got all of that stuff in there.
Yeah, it's a cool movie.
Yeah, good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Too.
I've enjoyed it so far. Yeah, it's good.
Good.
Nice Jeff Goldblum performance in the
movie. Yeah, it's very
good,
funny.
It's a good cast, really. Like, Jeff Goldblum, Lawrence Fishburne, Clarence Williams III is in it. I don't know the actor's name that plays the, like, overseeing police officer for Lawrence Fishburne, but he's actually pretty good, too.
Is Lawrence Fishburne credited as Larry Fishburne in it?
He might be. I didn't look at it.
Because I saw a tweet by someone. I don't want to, like, miscredit whoever it was, but someone said that whenever they see Larry Fishburne credited in the movie, they think it's like the movie's friends with him. Because it calls him Larry.
He's really good. Only movies I'm really good friends with can call me Larry.
This
one was just okay. We had an all right time while we were hanging out.
Lawrence.
Won't do it again.
Exactly. Ruben, what about you?
I am going to denounce a different film by a different Italian auteurist, and that's Rocco and His Brothers, directed by Luchino Visconti. The main thing you have to know about how I felt about this film was I watched the first hour and 40 minutes at work one day and then did not return to it for 5 weeks. It's like, I guess I better finish that movie. And the point at which I bailed was, of course, the rape scene to move forward the characterization of the brothers and not the woman who was being raped. And I was like, all right. I was already sort of not caring about this movie, but, you know, now I really don't. It seems to, like, have all those qualities of, like, epic films that other people like that just mean nothing to me. Like, this great tragedy over time of these sprawling characters, and I'm like, I don't know. None of this is, like, it's all supposed to be character-driven, but none of the characters are, like, particularly interesting. They're all just kind of, like, meatheads. Like, to varying degrees, like, from extreme meathead to, like, slightly less of a meathead, artistic meathead.
Scholarly meathead.
It's very pretty. Every Visconti movie is very pretty, but like, I don't know. It's gross. It's a gross movie.
Yeah. Well, it came 17 years after Ossessione.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting.
That he became
grosser as he became older.
I mean, I didn't love Ossessione either. Mm. I think I thought it was fine.
Though I was going to say that there's a very big scene in that movie that's at Notre Dame, too, isn't there?
I don't know.
Aren't they, like, on the roof of Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Running around? Yeah. So it's timely.
Yeah.
Not when this comes out, but it's timely when we record it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's no longer there. Oh, well. Fuck all this shit.
I love that it apparently made one of the Assassin's Creeds free so people could play it and be
look at the next roof
close
Notre
to the Notre Dame. Yeah. Yeah, it's like
people are really losing their shit about Notre Dame.
That cultural touchstone.
Assassin's Creed.
It's really
I don't
weird.
Think brands should be allowed to make decisions anymore about anything.
Yeah, we've
stopped with the brands.
Yeah, stop with the like anthropomorphic brands, right? God. Like they're just like seem
yeah.
corporations. The whole
Sonny
corporations
DeWitt
are people thing has really gone too far.
And then a bunch of other brands commented,
"That's
telling Sonny DeWitt that life was worth living." It's like yep. fuck you.
It's like the
why is our Orwellian nightmare so much more boring and stupid than he predicted?
It really
like,
is.
Why can't it be like psychotic and weird?
I mean, it's gonna be psychotic and weird once the brands like attain full like sentience somehow. Yeah. They just like
they're gonna
they get a body
to net dynamics and they're gonna own those robots.
The brands want a body.
Yeah, the U.S. has weird brands that have become like sentient or whatever, and Berlin has public transportation that has like a fun, quirky Twitter presence. And this is a quick diversion, but like I live next to a station called Schönleinstrasse, which is like it's really pretty central, but it's also like it's one of the most fucked up stations like I've ever been to. On a regular basis, like people like smoking crack, like passing out all over the place. It's just like, it all smells very intensely of like, you know, various fluids and
human
whatever.
Trauma.
And yeah, human trauma. And the Twitter thing of the BVG, as they call it, the Berlin transportation system, regularly posts stuff about the station with like a funny twist, like, like for example, lately they posted, oh, in case you think the smell at Schönleinstrasse is a bit weird today, it is asparagus season. Oh, I like, boy. And then like they post that, and then there's literally in the next like 5 minutes, like 300 comments of people saying, human suffering is not funny, you motherfuckers. And I'm never as proud of my city as when I see people really laying into that fucking shitty, jokey Twitter account. Yeah, so, you know, just so you know, it's not just in the U.S. that this is, like, really bad. It's everywhere. Anyway.
I think this was the best place for my denouncement of Rocco and his brothers to go.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Totally.
Fuck brands.
No,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, I mean it's
fine.
Whatever.
Yeah,
it's one of the.
It's been very Notre Dame specific Carrollton announcements for me so far this year. I watched some punchbacks before yeah. Notre Dame burned, and then
that's a weird thing. That's one of those weird things that happens where it's like something like gets in the air and just I don't know, like
embers.
Embers get into the air. The embers of an idea get into the air, man. No, but like
me watching the two Hunchback films is what caused Notre Dame to catch on fire.
Right, but you watched that because I was watching the Lindsay Ellis videos about the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So like I don't know what made me. I guess it's a weird chain reaction of like we got into this headspace, this realm, whatever, and like then that. This world event happened, and it's like, why do all those things happen at the same time? Like, yeah, it's strange. It's a weird
coincidence. It is the podcast butterfly effect.
I'm not saying it's one caused the other. I'm just saying it's weird that they all happen. Yeah, well, okay, yeah.
I'm also saying that.
I watched too many films with Notre Dame in the first 2 months of the year.
That's what happens.
Shit got too hot.
Started following college football. It's all going bad.
That was the picture that I saw that was pretty funny. It was a picture of Sean Astin, but in his Samwise Gamgee gear from Lord of the Rings, and a picture of the Pope. And he's like, this is for not letting me play football. And then the Pope says, no, you stupid, that's a different Notre Dame. This is where I live.
Oh, man.
A lot of layers to that joke.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right.
Onion jokes.
Basil, do you have anything else?
Oh, one more. Yeah, I sure do. I will go ahead and... Should I make it almost all denouncements except for Last Days?
Do it.
It does feel like the...
That's what you did last time.
Cinema's Last Days. Yeah, it's true.
Basil the denouncer.
Mm-hmm. Nah, because I just denounced Captain Marvel. That was boring.
It is boring. Agreed. No more talk about Marvel movies. The less, the better.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Until we do a podcast on Endgame.
Yeah, obviously. Patrick, got anything else?
10 seconds long. That's fine.
You weren't going to do anything if you weren't going to do that?
No, I mean, like all the other things that I've seen that I either talked about for the podcast or were movies I gave 3 stars to. I could also denounce Bohemian Rhapsody, but again... That movie's been talked about more than enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything else film related to herald or denounce. I will herald, though. I enjoyed going to Passover with Ruben and his family. That was fun.
That's lovely.
First time going to Passover. So.
Cool.
It's a good holiday because you eat a bunch of food.
Yeah.
And then
very eating focused.
Mostly
like
the story is good, except for the God part of it. But the story is like, people should be free, and also Moses was disabled, but he still led his people. So it's a very non-ableist story.
Correct. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
And I also want to shout out your mom roasting me with the name tag that she gave me for my place setting. She gave me the name tag that had a picture of one of the pharaohs on it.
Yeah.
So she gave me the oppressor name tag.
Oh,
Gentiles are welcome, joke. But roasted.
It's a good one.
That's true.
Very cool. All right. Ruben, you?
I sure do. I'm going to herald 1964's Marnie, directed by little-known director named Alfred Hitchcock. Which is my favorite movie that I've watched maybe this whole year.
Wow,
awesome.
It's definitely up there. Yeah, I think it is. Texas Villas. It's number 2.
Cool.
Marnie is a movie that, at least to me, feels like he wanted to do... Hitchcock started off wanting to do the reverse of Vertigo, where he was like, here's a guy who's like a normal dude and he, you know, is in love with this woman and she's just, you know, so crazy that like he's doing his best to like try to help her, but it's really like messing things up, like to sort of do like an inverse Vertigo. Mm-hmm. Like women can be crazy too. But I think he realized while he was making it, or maybe just Tippi Hedren sort of took control of the thematic oomph of the movie. Sean Connery, who's the man in that, is extremely unnerving and unpleasant. And basically, like, Bond with none of the fun. He's just, like, very controlling. The plot of the movie is about this woman who has been basically working for businesses for a short period of time and then stealing money from them. And he ends up catching her stealing money from his business, and he blackmails her into marrying him. And then when he tries to have sex with her, the fact that he ends up not doing it because she is, like, flipping out about it is supposed to, I think, seem good in the moment. But him not choosing to rape her after he blackmailed her into sexual slavery is sure is for sure not good.
Right.
It's a wackadoodle movie. And it's just very upsetting to watch. Tippi Hedren, you can sort of question how much she was acting at that point, because Hitchcock's behavior towards her was notoriously so abusive, and she seems kind of like she's losing it on screen, not unlike Shelley Duvall in The Shining, another famously unhinged performance due to the abuse of a man. So yeah, it's one of those Reuben movies where I love how gross it makes me feel watching it. Where I'm like, oh, people sure are bad, and filmmakers really do a lot of fucked up stuff to make the films that they want to make. And sometimes they're really good because they're fucked up.
I read a short story about that. It's pretty great. I read it yesterday. It's about a director who's kind of notoriously controlling and abusive on a movie set. It was pretty good, and also made me feel the way a lot of things feel lately, which was like, why do movies exist? There's a funny beat in the story where the director's looking at this chair and looking at the wheels, and then, you know, rolling her around and being like, good, looks like we got it, this is good. And then a second later, the main character, like, walks by the storage room that has, like, 200 rejected chairs, like, the exact same chair, but he just wanted this one. They built him 200 chairs before they finally got the one that he wants for this one scene. Good use of resources. Perfect.
Yeah.
Mm. What's this story called?
It's called Animals. Mm-hmm. I don't have it right in front of me. I can't remember the writer, but it's pretty contemporary. It was written in the last couple of years. Another funny part in the story is, like, after all this time, then there's a scene where they're finally shooting the movie, and the dialogue, it makes it clear it's, like, some very shitty, like, weird sci-fi movie. But, like, previous to that, the reader had no context for what the movie actually was. It sounds like this, like, art film that he's really focused on. But then once they get to the dialogue, it's dialogue very similar to Clouds of Sils Maria, fake X-Men. It's like, how are we going to get through this portal into another universe?
Does anybody's character exist outside of time in that one?
They might.
That's a different bad-sounding movie in Clouds of Sils Maria. You're talking about the one with Chloe Moretz, right? Where she's like, playing a superhero.
Oh,
yeah.
The ones that they're watching with the 3D glasses and eating popcorn.
Yeah, that's right.
That's one of my favorite moments in that movie. When she's like, and what about, I can't remember the villain's name. She's like, what about Zargos? And she's like, Zargos is great. I really feel for his situation. And then she, like, looks at it and she goes, no, fucking Zargos sucks. And Julia Fitch spits out her beer all over Kristen Stewart.
Great movie. Harold, that one.
Yeah. Ruben, you got anything else?
That was it. That was four.
All right.
Marnie, Rocchio, and his brothers.
Rocchio.
And his brothers. And Shoeshine. And that other one. It.
Classic.
It, yes. All right.
Not the Stephen King It.
The remake of a remake.
I'm sure Well, the one I've seen of that is even worse than this It. My That's rankings true. Of it is better than it.
All right, then. Thanks all. Thanks everyone for joining us. I think at this point, it's safe to say that our episodes are available on iTunes. So if you listen to this episode via iTunes, please be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a rating and or a review. It would be really appreciated. Otherwise, visit our website, fancyfilmfellows.com.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And visit our Twitter, fancyfilmpod, if you want to tweet at us with your own heralds or denouncements for you for this month.
Yeah.
Be very appreciated. Otherwise, see you all very soon with our next installment. I'm not sure which one is coming next. Ruben, do you know?
It will be
Summer of Sam.
No, Summer of Sam.
Oh, no, wait. It'll be the Summer end of Sam will have already come out. Ha, 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 ha.
It'll be Patrick's I'm pick, but his original list was rejected.
Whatever is on my new list.
All right. So
my fault. Apologies.
No worries. Right. So until then, see you all very soon. And thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.